It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Thank you so much for joining us. Each of you are treasured. You are valued. You have a purpose. Today, live with intention, strive for excellence, and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. I so appreciate each and every one of you joining us. Our goal is to help you get your brain around these issues so that you can engage in the battle of ideas with your friends and your family and your colleagues. This is a very important battle. I feel like we are in an ideological Normandy right now, and we certainly need to be in this battle for our country at this time. And thank you to this great team I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. And producer Steve, I don't normally talk about these kinds of things, but we've had quite a couple of weeks, and I've been broadcasting remotely because I have a new little grandbaby, and it's amazing technology that we can make this happen. And I've been out helping with that, and really appreciate all the work that you've done to make that happen as well. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's just part of the my commitment to grandchild
time,
welfare, and that kind of stuff, you know, and make sure grandma gets to where she needs to be.
And so it is a lot of moving parts, but I really appreciate that. And truly, these little ones are blessings, and we have such a responsibility on what we are passing on to them. When we had Heather Zumarraga on yesterday, and she said something interesting. She said, you know, whether or not you have children or don't have children, we need to really care about what we pass on to the next generation. And that has really been the American idea. And many of the founding fathers that fought for freedom, for liberty from Great Britain, did not have children or did not have biological children. And yet they saw something bigger than themselves, and that was people that are living freely, and that and liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom. It's not that you get to do anything you want to anytime. There's a responsibility to that, and there's a responsibility to the next generation, and that is something that is inherently American. And the idea that 77 years ago on June 6, 1944, we had young men who did not have children that were storming the beaches in Normandy, France, to fight Hitler and the Nazis. Because, again, liberty is something bigger than ourselves. And the idea now that we are going to pass on a big, fat, big debt to the next generation that they did not even have a voice or a vote in incurring is something that is un-American, Steve.
Well, you're going to talk about the bill of the day later, I'm quite sure. And I just keep thinking every time this topic comes up and how these topics tie together. Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. Yes, we have life. We have some amount of liberty today, but it's waning. But the pursuit of happiness is totally getting hammered, and it's via a financial, you know, the weapon being used against us is financial.
Well, it really is, and we see what is happening here in Colorado. It's been bill after bill. When we've talked to Hal Van Herke with Castlegate Knife and Tool, he talks about what's happening to small businesses, and Susan Kochevar at 88 Drive-In Theater, and then, of course, Karen Levine. We talk about the assault on private property rights. And this has got to stop. At some point in time, we have to say, you have enough, and we need to start to roll this back. So anyway, we've got a lot to talk about today. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And I really appreciate each and every one of you who are contributing to support our independent voice as we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. And it is never compassionate to take other people's rights. We see that happening all the time now. Their property, we see that all the time now. Their freedom, livelihood, all those things have been taken via force. And the force can be weapon, it can be policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, or the new one that we're seeing used rampantly right now is coercion.
Yeah, the coercion one, though, that needs some little extra explanation. It is coercion, but I don't think the people out there looking at it see it that way. They're like, look what I can get. I can get something for nothing.
Or I can have my name put into a lottery if I have taken. And remember, my friends, this has not been approved by the FDA. And I was talking to my friend Sue yesterday, and now they're wanting to vaccinate children who are almost nil at any risk of the COVID-19 Wuhan, China virus. And we still don't know all of the effects of this. And it's like, let's pump the brakes on this. But instead, the coercion, Colorado's offering a lottery of, what, five $1 million winners for getting the experimental drug jab, as well as Mesa County's using taxpayer dollars. It's like, really, this is not the proper role of government, Steve.
I don't want to steal your thunder. I said it yesterday. I'll say it again today. The FDA has been around for 114 years. It has been, you know, the spearhead of anything to do with food and drugs. They're missing in action on this one, and I want to know why.
Well, the other thing, though, is I'm concerned about coercion as well. We've seen a lot of these agencies that we used to really trust that had our best interests in mind, and we are seeing that maybe not so much. And this whole thing that's happening with Fauci now is pretty interesting regarding he may have known and been involved and funding this, they call it the gain of function on these viruses that can attack human beings, different age groups. I find it pretty amazing. And here he was the guy that was being almost godlike. And I just didn't seem, something didn't match up with that guy with me.
Well, you're being all serious here, but you know me, I like to throw humor in, because if we didn't laugh, we cry. Political cartoon that's out shows Hillary, the queen of emails, watching TV, and her TV sitting on a big chest, and on the chest it says email. And Hillary's comment is, what an idiot. Oh, and I'm sorry, who's on TV but she's watching Fauci getting grilled on his emails. Her comment is, what an idiot.
And to connect the dots, for those of you that may not remember, that she had an email server that was in, I think, a broom closet here in Colorado. But they actually, they smashed computers. They tried to erase everything on those computers. And so that's, I think, the connection you want to make on what an idiot that he actually had those emails out there.
Yeah,
right?
Instead of you using her official State Department email address, she was using private email to correspond with who knows who for the Clinton Foundation benefits and whatnot. And, okay, let's just try to get our hands on those emails. We can't.
So Fauci was using actually his official email? Is that what that was?
Well, I mean, from what I can tell, that it's like a trail of breadcrumbs. They're using that to go back and find out what he knew, when he knew it, versus what he was telling the public.
I was actually, I didn't really hear all the audio. I was watching more the body language of that Martha McCallum interview last Wednesday with Collins. I think he's, was he with the NIH? I can't remember what his position is. I know that the headline is in here. But I was watching the body language, and it was really interesting that as she was asking the harder and harder questions, he was getting more and more animated. And once again, this can be signs of somebody that might be struggling with the truth.
Well, yeah, there are people who are quote-unquote experts at the monitoring body language and disseminating what might be happening inside that person's mind. I didn't see the video, but I have long been suspicious of this guy.
Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing about it, is eventually the truth does come out. Now, we see that there's a lot of different entities that are trying to suppress the truth, but eventually the truth comes out. And we've got a great show planned for you today. We'll go to the bill of the day here in just a minute. We'll do that after break. But Helen Rawley is our guest in segments 3 and 4. And she's written a really important piece regarding, this was in the Federalist, how politicians' stupid COVID reactions lit a match under inflation. And that was at the Federalist. And so we'll be talking with her about that. But she also, in her email newsletter, had written something about Tiananmen Square, which the anniversary on that was this last Friday, and that just about a candlelight. And I thought, okay, let's do a quote today about a candlelight. And came up with Anne Frank. And she said, "Look how a single candle can both defy and define the darkness." And Anne Frank was a German-Dutch diarist. She was Jewish, and she was one of the Jewish victims of the Holocaust. And she gained fame after she died with the 1947 publication of The Diary of a Young Girl, in which she documents her life in a hiding room, 1942 to 1944, during the German occupation of the Netherlands in World War II. She was born in 1929. She died in 1945 at the age of 15 at the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp in East Hanover, Nazi Germany. But again, look how a single candle can defy and define the darkness. And just think about all of us out there that are working to light a candle so that we can see what is happening there. And I took just such great hope from that wonderful quote, Steve.
Already I'm envisioning an event that you might sponsor nighttime down at the Capitol. Everyone has a candle.
Oh, yeah. I don't really like to go downtown anymore, though.
Well, we'll make it a big group.
We'll make it a big group, okay?
But maybe that's not even safe. I don't know.
We'll have to talk about that. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the bill of the day. We have other headlines. Helen Rawley will be in segments 3 and 4. Before we do that, though, one of my great sponsors is Hooters Restaurants. They have 5 locations. That is, Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. The girls are coming over tomorrow night, and I'm going to be getting the boneless wings tomorrow night. I'm not quite sure which rub I'll have put on that, but they're half the calories. The girls love them, and that's what I'm going to do. For more information, go to my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the sponsors tab. I highly recommend all of the people that are there, all those businesses. Click on the Hooters tab, and you'll have all their specials for June, and the Avs are in the playoffs, so what a great place to go to watch the games. And stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who contribute to keep our independent voice on the air as we search for truth and clarity and look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And our bill of the day is Senate Bill 21-293. The sponsors, Senators Hansen and Rankin, and then Representative Escar. And Bob Rankin, who is a Republican, I don't know him well, but I think he cares deeply about his constituents. But I am frustrated to see his name on some of these recent bills, because what we have here is increasing values in home prices. And we'll talk about this with Karen Levine and Lee Brown on Friday. But this is all because of public policy. And when we've talked with Randall O'Toole with the Cato Institute about housing, putting in these urban land boundaries is what causes housing values to go up. And in fact, Boulder is one of the most expensive places to live in Colorado, if not in the country. And it's because they have put boundaries on being able to grow and to build additional homes. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that when you have a government that is using incentives to bring some businesses in, to bring more people in, and then you limit the housing, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that values go up. Which that seems pretty cool, right? Except the supply is becoming so limited that I've got a new term. I'm sure somebody else has said this, but the velocity of housing, it gets to a point where people will not move out of their houses because they can't find another place to live. And then what we see here with there'll be capital gains taxes on it if Joe Biden has his way. And unless you invest in another property, but so you'll have capital gains taxes. But the other thing is this hidden tax. And that is, as your property values go up, the assessments go up, and you get hit with a higher and higher tax bill. And this is a way that I think that can start to price people out of their own property, Steve. It's a terrible thing.
You'll get no argument here. I've been watching this now especially mine went up 2 years ago, 27%. My property taxes jumped in 1 year. And now the newest assessment came out. And again, they're at it again, or they're coming after me for,
well, the value for everybody, because I mean, nothing's changed. You still live in the same house.
Right.
But you just have to pay higher taxes to live in the same house.
And my complaint is, and I hope, if Karen's listening, I hope I don't say something really dumb here, but they're playing a game on paper that ultimately is real money to you and me.
Right. And when you say Karen...
I'm sorry, Karen Levine.
Yeah. But Karen's not playing that on paper.
But as a novice, I would say something that I maybe just don't understand. She has a much more thorough knowledge of.
Right, right. But so what has happened? This bill apparently is, quote unquote, trying to give some relief to these higher and higher assessments. But it's not really relief. What it does is it just will push off into the future having to pay that tax bill. So when you sell your property, that bill will come due in addition to, again, it could be capital gains. So just think about all that you've worked for. The government comes in and they take more and more of that. So this apparently wants to give some relief to that. However, what I find so interesting about it is Senate Bill 293. It says how the measure would work, and this is from the Colorado Sun. It says, for the 2022-2023 tax years, the 7.15% rate at which homes are now assessed would be reduced to 6.95% for single-family homes and 6.8% for multifamily homes. So right there, why is there a difference on that? Again, though, they are trying to push people into apartments, multifamily homes, and so they would pay a lower tax rate. For the same years, the 29% rate at which non-residential or commercial is assessed would be reduced to 26.4% for two newly created subsets of property, agricultural property and renewable energy property. Imagine that. And those only make up a fraction of all that tax property. But I find the timing so interesting, Steve, that this would be after the 2022 election, when people would start to realize what's really happening regarding their property taxes.
That you're a smart person, because I mean, I jumped into this based on what I had said earlier about what's happening in my own personal situation, and oh, really? Some tax relief, and then find out, well, it's really not relief. It's being deferred. And then, again, your vantage point, it's being deferred in a particular time frame.
It is. And then I wanted to go to this quote, which was very troubling for me, by Senator Rankin. He said that then these taxes could go back up without a Tabor vote. And the reason is because this is just something that's temporary. He says, our intent, and this is the thing that just really concerns me, our intent is that taxes don't go up any faster than government needs. That takes my breath away.
They keep trying to paint this picture that they're living hand, what's the expression, hand to mouth. And I'm just not buying that.
Right. And then going on into the piece in the Colorado Sun, and when we did our voter's guide, we highly recommended a no vote on repealing the Gallagher Amendment, which was had to do with property taxes. And this is what he said, when we repealed Gallagher, we knew that we might face this situation where property taxes started going up faster than was reasonable. It happened a little faster than we expected. Now, wait a minute. The November election was, what, 7-8 months ago? And here we are. And I don't like to say I told you so, but I told you so.
That phrase would rise faster than what is reasonable. Reasonable in whose mind?
Right.
Who makes that call?
And Tabor, Colorado's Taxpayer Bill of Rights, says that government can grow at the rate of population growth plus inflation. That's very reasonable. But the politicians and the bureaucrats and the interested parties do not want to adhere to that at all. And then you look at this, Steve, you go to the next article, and this is from the Center Square. And it says the Colorado Senate approves legislation to spend billions of federal stimulus dollars. And we're receiving $3.8 billion this here in Colorado under the Federal American Jobs Plan. And this is Senate Bill 21-288. It would create the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. And again, doesn't the titles of these just, I mean, it's almost comical.
They sound so noble.
Yes. And so it'll hold the $3.8 billion, and $380 million is going to fund multimodal transportation projects. And we talk about how our roads and bridges, that we need money for that. And multimodal is your trains and your buses and your bike lanes. And we have seen that during the pandemic that people didn't want to ride on trains or buses. And riding your bike, I mean, if you want to, that's fine. But here we're going to take $380 million of that and the $3.8 billion that's coming from the federal government. And Colorado's kind of getting paid off also. We're getting a lot of money because we're becoming, you know, that we're pushing for this agenda of the radical progressive / regressive activist left. And so this is a big payoff as well, I think, Steve.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, I'm sure. there's no doubt. It's probably a real thing to be sure that there's certainly people back in Washington that are keeping a scorecard on every state and what they're doing. And certainly this state is doing well in that regard.
Well, and think about it. How is it that Colorado got the Major League Baseball All-Star Game before the ink had even dried on anything in Atlanta? I mean, I wonder how those negotiations were going. Again, I think that is a bit of a payoff to Colorado.
There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, and just look at the timing, how quickly that decision was made. And when it was first, yeah, as all that upheaval was going on in Georgia, and then all of a sudden there's this kind of a rumor, this scuttle going around, hey, the All-Star Game could be moved here. Well, before we knew it,
it was moved here. Yeah. That'll be interesting to see if people are masked or what the, you know, how that whole thing is going to transpire. It's going to be pretty interesting. Let's go to another one. This is from the Colorado Sun by Mike Litwin. And the headline is, Jared Polis may be big on emission reduction goals, but just don't let regulators try to enforce them. And Patty and I had a conversation about this, that he has been very supportive of these unattainable, unachievable goals. And it says that back in 2019, the legislature passed with Polis's backing a bold, progressive goals for reducing heat-trapping gas emissions from a 2005 level baseline. My question has always been, why 2005? And that was before we had all of this growth here. It sets us up to fail. There's no way that we can really hit those emission goals. But if you don't, then that gives them more power to come in and do more stuff. And it says the bill was signed by Polis and it set a goal of 26% reduction by 2026, a 50% reduction by 2030, and 90% by 2050. But it says all is not going well with that bill. But going on here then, let's see, who was it? It was Faith Winter, who is sponsoring the bill, and along with Representative Dominique Jackson, they want to put something in this year regarding more legislation on that. And Polis has said that he is going to veto this, which I find so interesting. But he said this. This is what he said in quotes. This would give unelected regulators near dictatorial control of our entire economy.
I saw that quote and I just burst out laughing because how many of these, since we've been doing Bill of the Day, how many of dozens and dozens of unelected people do these bills drag into the process? So, and unelected people. So all of a sudden now he has a problem with unelected officials.
Well, and Steve, this is the only thing that I can figure out. Is he doesn't have a problem with giving regulators power if he does it via executive order. But this would be from the legislature. That's the only thing that I can figure out is why it that he doesn't have full power on it, that it actually gives power through the legislature. That's the only thing I can come up with on it.
I wonder if they had to enlarge his office to get his ego in the door.
Or to get his pin in the door, for sure. One other thing, and we mentioned it yesterday when we had Heather on, and that is the G7 are backing steps to deter tax dodging by multinational firms. And U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who attended the London meeting, said the agreement provides tremendous momentum for reaching a global deal that would end the race to the bottom in corporate taxation and ensure fairness for the middle class and working people in the U.S. and around the world. Now, we have seen big business and big government like each other. So let's read between the lines. She says that they're actually going to be evening things out, let's say, with corporate taxation. But ensuring fairness for the middle class and working people in the U.S. and around the world, those are the people that are going to get hurt because they will have to pay a higher tax for the goods and services that make their lives better. And I wonder, where do these taxes go and what are they going to spend that on? And I just can't believe that that's happening. Let's go to break, though. When we come back, we'll be talking with Helen Raleigh. And she's written a really important piece regarding how politicians' stupid COVID reactions lit a match under inflation. And we can see it across the board, whether or not it's at the gas pump, if you go to the grocery store, everything is becoming more expensive, and it is because of public policy. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Helen Raleigh.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's KimMunson.com, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests. And we'll be getting back in the swing of things regarding additional podcasts and op-eds. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com. And also thank you to each and every one of you who are contributing to keep our independent voice on the air as we look at issues, freedom versus force, force versus freedom. On the line with me is my good friend Helen Raleigh. She is an author, a speaker. She writes at The Federalist and a variety of different places. You've seen her on national TV. She's a great commentator, and she immigrated from China. She has several books. Let me get those for you. She has Confucius Never Said. Her latest is Backlash, How Communist China's Aggression Has Backfired. You can follow her on Parler and Twitter at H. Raleigh Speaks. Helen Raleigh, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim.
You've had a big weekend. I want to say congratulations to you. You received a very prestigious award this last weekend, and that is the Leader in Action Award from the Leadership Program of the Rockies at their big event down at the Broadmoor. Congratulations on that, Helen. It is very well deserved.
Thank you very much. Well, I have a big shoes to fill because you are the formal winner, so thank you.
That's right. I received that in 2016, so thank you, but it's so well-deserved, and you're doing such amazing work. But the first thing I wanted to talk about is a recent piece that you had in The Federalist, and that is how politicians' stupid COVID reactions lit a match under inflation. And inflation, Helen, it's the silent thief, if you will. And there's good inflation, and that is if a product has such demand that the price goes up because there's a value that's being provided and people are paying more and more for that. There's a good inflation, but there is a bad inflation that occurs with public policy. And that's what we're seeing here. Everything's getting more expensive. The grocery store, gas, and this hurts everyday hardworking people, Helen.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And inflation is really theft. It's a theft for poor people because it's like so many other things. It impacts people who are economically disadvantaged much worse than people, you know, in the upper income level.
Well, and what's astonishing is this inflation has really been caused by public policy.
Yes, and we did not have to be this way. Like you mentioned earlier, there's good inflation. So inflation is a phenomenon that there's a gradual, steady increase of price of goods and services. So in the early stage, inflation, like you said, it was good because that means people are making more money. Yes, and they can afford to buy more things. There's a healthy demand. And given that we had an economic lockdown last year, that now everything's going back slowly, gradually. Our economy is opening up, since gradually going back to normal. So some price increase is expected, and it's normal. But what's not normal is we have so much money supply. As Milton Friedman said, inflation is always a monetary event. It's man-made. It's created mostly by having so much money in the system. The money needs somewhere to go, and they drive up the price of goods and services. And because also we're handing out all those checks, unemployment checks left and right, so there's not many people who are actually working. So you don't see as much wage increases, but all you see are price increases.
Well, and yesterday I talked with Heather Zumarraga, who's an economic expert, and she talked about stagflation, which is really terrible because that means that people that are working or people that are on a fixed income, their prices of their goods and services go up, but their income is remaining stagnant. And there becomes, I think, a hopelessness in stagflation because you don't feel like you can get ahead, Helen.
Yes, and stagnation is one of the worst economic phenomena because, just like you described, it's basically it's the worst of combination, right? You will have, on the one hand, rising prices and sharp rise. We're not just talking about gradually rise. You have sharp increases of goods and price of goods and services. On the other hand, people's income and standard of living are not going up accordingly. So you have the worst of the two worlds, basically happen at the same time. And we experienced this before. If you recall, I wasn't here, but back in the 70s, that the United States experienced a stagnation. And that was partially driven by the oil shortage, but also partially was driven by central bank policies. And in order to overcome that, it actually eventually led to inflation was so bad. In order to overcome that, our central bank had to increase interest rate all the way up to 22%. So it had to brought a lot of economic pain in order to get this, inflation and stagnation under control. So we are heading towards that.
Well, and people that have been trying to find income-producing places to put their money, 22% on a CD or something like that sounds really good. Why is that a problem, Helen?
Well, it's a problem because so from both personal as well as business standpoint, business needs to borrow money to expand, to produce. So when the interest rate is so high, business naturally will pull back. They will not expand, they will not produce because it's too expensive to borrow money. And that will, when businesses choose not to expand, not to produce, and that means, they're going to have to cut back jobs, and they're not going to hire workers. They may have to even lay off workers because they're not expanding, right? So that means, people are losing jobs, and again, they're losing income. And also with interest so high, that means that, you think about the mortgage market, that people cannot afford, they're not going to be able to afford to borrow money to buy a house. And the housing market is not just housing, it's also, putting with demand with lumber, cement, steel, all those other commodities. So when people cannot afford a house, they're not buying a house, and so we're not building houses. And that means that all the demand for lumber and cement and, all this other stuff will come, will drop. When those things drop, again, that means those employers or those industries have to fire people too, have to lay off people too. So it's a really bad cycle, to go through, and it's not good for individual, and it's definitely not good for business.
Well, and I found something interesting in your piece here that the Washington Post, you said, when they were talking about inflation numbers, that they did not include, I think, food and energy. And I find that so dishonest in their reporting.
Yeah, it's not only dishonest, it just showed how disconnected they are from everyday people. So the way to measure inflation, how do we know our inflation is increasing, is by consumer price index. And the labor Department of Labor produced a consumer price index on a monthly basis. And there are two ways to measure it. One way is to include food and energy. Those food and energy, price of food and energy are usually pretty volatile. So there's another way to measure it is to take in those two items out. So basically the Washington Post is arguing, you will take those two items out, inflation ain't look so bad. Yeah, but also those two items are, again, closely related to the well-being of everyday people. And those are the two areas we have seen huge, inflation rate increase since 1980s, in the last 5 months only. So, it's not always dishonest, but also showed how our elite class are so disconnected to everyday people, and also that they are really propaganda for the Democrat Party, right? They just try to spin the story to try to convince American people, oh, things ain't look so bad, you know, if you don't care about the food and energy. Well, guess what? Everyday people care about, you know, what they put on the table and how to get to work.
Right, right. Helen, what I find just absolutely amazing is that this has all happened basically since the Harris Biden Obama Rice administration took over. And so we can see that it's caused by public policy. And I'm not sure if we had not had the four Trump years in there, that I think that this would have been occurring and people would not have thought that there was any way that this could be turned around. But it can be turned around because we've seen it.
Yes, it can be turned around, but the thing is, it depends on when, right? We are still early in the inflation cycle. So if the Biden administration decided, you know, we're not going to push the $6 trillion, budget bill this year. We're not going to push the $1.9 trillion infrastructure this year. We're not going to put so much money into the system this year. Yes, there's a chance to turn around. If they decided that we're going to stop the $300 unemployment check, additional unemployment check right now to help incentivize people to go back to work, yes, you know, those things are still possible to turn it around. But the thing is, there's no sign from the Democrats at the Biden administration that they are going to do that. You know, one thing about the Democrats is, you know, once they are in power, they tend to overact and overreach, I should say. And this is what they're doing now. They think they're in power. They control the White House and the both houses, the Congress, and they're going to push the extreme socialist agenda, more extreme even than under the Roosevelt administration, more extreme than under the Obama administration. So they are not turning back. So, unfortunately, I have to warn your listeners that we're just getting started. It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse until we can change the power structures, put the people who actually care about limited government, care about, you know, we don't spend beyond our means, you know, to bring fiscal, disciplines back into our national government.
So, Helen, you're very, very familiar with China. You grew up there. And socialism is not about free stuff. Now, you had mentioned the $300 a week in unemployment benefits, and that seems like free stuff. As Maggie Thatcher said, the problem with socialism is ultimately you run out of other people's money. When that happens, under both socialism and communism, you still have to have producers. Under Mao, millions and millions and millions of people died. But you still have to have producers. But the problem is the incentives aren't right. So people don't work hard. They don't show up for work. The people on the edge of the spectrum, the infirm, the elderly, the young, if they don't produce, they become expendable. It's not a good place to go, but the free stuff is the carrot to get people to vote for that. But ultimately, it doesn't end well for anybody that's looking for that free stuff, Helen.
No, it's not. And you're right that the socialism is never about everyone has everything and everyone has the free stuff. If you look at the history of socialism and, you know, really it's the prelude of communism, the Marxism and Leninism, I mean, they're all in the same shade of evil, that they all ultimately boil down to power. They're not about, you know, distributing for everyone to have everything. They're about the power. They're about a small group of people want to grasp and hold down to power and have the power over the masses, have the power to decide how the masses should think, act, and, you know, live. So that's why socialism, if you look at what happened in Soviet Union, China, Cuba, socialism always ends up in dictatorship politically because it's always about a small group of people have to stay in power. And it's also always end up in destruction because it's not, as you said, they're not emphasized on production. They're emphasized on consumption. Well, if you don't produce, you know, there's a limit to how much you can consume, and eventually you're gonna have this phenomenon that in a socialist country, it happens every socialist country, that you're gonna have a few at the top who has the power, who has the wealth, and then you have the majority of the people, you know, share equal misery. That happens everywhere. It even happened here when you see the people who promote socialism. You know, they like Bernie Sanders and the YouTubers, you know, who claim tax the rich. They always get the rich themselves. And when they become millionaires, then they say, oh, we're actually advocating tax the billionaire. So it always happens about a few small group of people grasp power, hold on to power, get rich themselves at the expense of the well-being and freedom of the mass.
And, you know, there's two ways to make money. There's to earn it or to steal it. And when we see, and I think we all agree that some taxation is certainly important in a society. But when we see this continual overreach of more government taking more and more and more of people's money, it's really theft. And what happens then, the incentives, people are no longer incentivized to be creative and innovative, which is something that is the bedrock to the American idea. Let's button this up, Helen, and we're going to go to break. But before we do that, what's your final thought that you'd like to leave regarding this piece that you had in The Federalist, How Politicians' Stupid COVID Reactions Lit a Match Under Inflation?
Well, I just want people to be aware. I want people to be aware of what's going on. I think we need to be vigilant, knowing the direction of the country is going. And I really want to encourage people to take actions, you know, to participate in the political process. You know, I often get emails, people telling me, oh, you know, the silent majority is always your, Kim, I'm sure you're getting emails like that, or even people tell you that too. But it's time that we don't need to have silent majority. You know, if you're silent, you're not in the majority. So if you're silent, you need to speak up. You need to take action. You need to get involved in the political process to help stop this train from going nowhere. So that's really my parting advice.
Okay. Well, we're going to go to break. When we come back, I want to talk with you about this piece that you had in your email newsletter, Candlelight in the Dark. Before we do that, though, Castlegate Knife and Tool is located in Sedalia, Colorado. They are a family-owned business, and they have a wide selection of knives, whether or not you're a collector or a chef or a sportsman. Father's Day is coming up, and Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place to do your shopping for Father's Day. So check out Castlegate.com. That's Castlegate.com. We're going to go to break. I'm talking with Helen Raleigh, and we will be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who contribute to support us as we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Helen Raleigh is on the line with me, and she is a chartered financial analyst. She's an American entrepreneur, writer, speaker, senior contributor at The Federalist, and her writings have appeared in the national media, including The Wall Street Journal and Fox News. She's the author of several books, including Confucius Never Said and Backlash, How Communist China's Aggression Has Backfired. You can follow her on Parler and Twitter at H. Raleigh, that's R-A-L-E-I-G-H, speaks. Helen Raleigh, it's always great to have you on the show, but wanted to just talk a little bit about this piece that you've done, Candlelight in the Dark. And because we were going to chat about this, I had pulled this Anne Frank quote where she said, "Look at how a single candle can both defy and define the darkness." And I thought that was so appropriate given this piece that you've done, Candlelight in the Dark, regarding the 32nd anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. And so tell our listeners a bit about that, Helen, about this piece.
Sure. This is from my newsletter. I have a newsletter through the Substack, so I encourage your listeners to subscribe to it. I send out on a weekly basis with new pieces. So last Friday, June 4th, was the 32nd year anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. I was especially feeling sentimental, even though it's not like, you know, normally it's like the 5, the 10th, or the big anniversaries. But I feel especially sentimental this year because Hong Kong used to be one of the few places in China under the communist governance that could still have a commemoration candlelight vigil for the last 30 years, you know, to commemorate this event. But as we know, Hong Kong basically descended into a just an ordinary Chinese city. The Communist Party had intensified the crackdowns in Hong Kong since last year, passed the national security laws, and basically turned this once the freest place on earth into an ordinary Chinese city under the Communist Party's iron fist. So Hong Kongers this year were not allowed to host the candlelight vigil again, and anyone who attempted would be subject to 5 years, you know, in prison. So that the fact that I wrote this before the day of the morning of the June 4th. So what happened in Hong Kong, so I feel very sentimental because I was thinking, well, if Hong Kong is going dark, that means the whole China is going dark. That's the Hong Kong itself is like a little candlelight, you know, in the darkness, that we are witnessing the descending of basically the demise of one of the freest cities, right? So does that mean the tyranny one, you know, freedom lost? As you often talk about freedom versus force, that doesn't mean force won, you know, freedom lost. But I have to say, on the evening of June 4th, many Hong Kongers, despite the warning, despite the risk of going to prison, many of them actually show up around. I mean, they were not allowed to go to the Victoria Park, so they were walking around the street. They were not allowed to hold the candles, so they turn on the cell phone light. You know, many of them use their own way to express that, to show the tyranny, to show the tyrants in power that they're still remembering, there's still hope for freedom. So I found this was deeply moving. You know what's actually turned out.
Well, and I've thought a lot about freedom and liberty with what has happened in America over the last with this pandemic, and the pandemic didn't just happen. I mean, you look at it, that what was in place regarding giving all of these health departments all of this power to shut down the economy, all of these bureaucrats to all of this power. This has been being put in place for a long time here in America, Helen. And in fact, after the Colorado Department of Public Health was really, you know, closing down businesses under the guise of trying to keep people protected, I thought, well, I wonder how they got that power. And I went back, and there is legislation that in many years they add additional legislation onto that. And that piece of legislation now is over 1,000 pages. And so tyranny doesn't just show up. It's been being put in place here in America for quite some time, and it's because I think we haven't been paying attention enough, Helen.
Right, and I think I sincerely hope that the pandemic will be a wake-up call for all of us. We see how the other side show their true color, right? Mm-hmm. We see how the Democrat Party is being run over by the, you know, has been taken over by the extreme left, and what their ideology really is, and what they intend to do. What they intend to do is they're gonna use every crisis as the opportunity to grab power, hold on to power, and you know, to lord over us. And they intensify their condemnation of America, and they want to destroy what we hold dear, and it's a total destruction, so they can build their ideological utopia. And that's all leftists want to do. And that's why what's going on in the United States today is no different from a Marxist, Leninist movement. So that's what we should be clear about. So this is why I mentioned in the last segment at the very end that we need to see through this. We need to see what's really going on, and we need to all stand up taking action. And not everybody needs to, like you and I, have to be so out in the public, to say and write, stuff to be at the front. But there's still things many people can do. I mentioned before on your show, establish a freedom library, attend your school board meetings, even things like, contributing to your show, subscribe to my newsletter. I mean, those are the small things each one of us can do. One thing we could learn from the Tiananmen Square movement, as I told you, I feel very sentimental, is when I go back to look at the Tankman picture, right, the photo about this young Chinese man, very simple outfit, standing defiantly in front of rows of tanks, not just three tanks, it was a rows of tanks. And he had a grocery bag in his hand. So he did not woke up that morning. He didn't wake up that morning, decide he's going to be a hero. He's going to go challenge one of the most powerful regimes out there. But when he went out there, he saw injustice. He took a step forward. I think the biggest lesson we can learn from him is everyone can make a difference. So we should not underestimate our individual power, our individual strength. We should not let anyone have the opportunity, give them any opportunity to decide how we want to live our life.
Right. And there's a difference between living and existing. And living is living in liberty. Helen Raleigh, I so appreciate you joining us this morning. And again, I'd recommend that people get your latest book, and that is Backlash, How Communist China's Aggression Has Backfired. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Kim.
And our quote for today at the end of the show is from Anne Frank. And this is what she said. She said, "What a wonderful thought it is that some of the best days of our lives haven't even happened yet." So my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America. Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.